Chapter 12. Bobby Denver's Barbecue Chicken and Ribs is a 15-restaurant chain with outlets across central Texas. Funded by the IRS-troubled country singer in the late 1980s, they specialize in honest Lone Star steak cooking, whole chickens and blackened slabs of pork baby back ribs slathered in dark barbecue sauce, collard greens, black-eyed peas, and pretty good cornbread. Low lighting, piped country and western, and comfy faux leather banquettes. Licensed, too. The branch, situated just off the 122 between the estate and Bruntsville, was a favorite with Miles and Danny, and it was here that J.C. brought everyone for a Thanksgiving dinner treat. Seated all along both sides of one of the long wooden tables in the back, near the restrooms, Becky, Miles, and Danny. Morgan, Chris, and Big Bob. Gus and Dottie. Claude and Pete. Julia and Amanda. And, in the middle, leaning back against the wall, hands behind his head, a grin on his face, his third beer starting to get good to him. As he listens to Becky trying to make a dumbass speech over Morgan and Chris's heckling, Jesus Christ. That's right. There are 13 of them present. Will you assholes shut up? Becky says. Man, in front of her kids, too, Morgan says. Terrible, Chris says, shaking his head, Miles and Danny giggling. All I'm trying to say, Becky raises her glass of beer again, is that I think, given how well the harvest has gone, a couple of deals we've been able to do on selling some stuff on, and thanks to Claude on all that, Claude grins shyly. Well, financially, it looks like we're going to be in a much better position than I originally thought. So, everyone, well done. Whistles and cheering and the clacking of beer mugs as the food arrives. Who wanted the spicy chicken? And everyone starts digging into those steaming baked potatoes, glistening mounds of slaw and beans, everyone talking over each other, happy and excited as they pass those plates around. Jesus stops with a forkful of emerald green collards halfway to his mouth and looks around the table. The guy with HIV, laughing with the dirt poor farm boy, the lesbians and the broken Vietnam vet, the ancient alcoholics all scrubbed up for their night out, the ex-hooker, ex-junkie, single mom passing plates down to her kids, the ex-fat guy and the black drummer, the poor, the pissed on, the off-the-radar, non-tax-paying dreck. Other than his dewy-eyed, Springsteen-esque belief in the potency, the primacy of rock and roll, Jesus is not a sentimental man. But at this moment, as he looks from face to face, as in a made-for-TV movie, the lights seem to get softer, the film slowing down, a gentle tinkling of piano fading up on the soundtrack. All his people, right here, right now. To bring hope unto the hopeless. Just as he allows himself a smile at this thought, he glances around, across the restaurant, and sees a middle-aged couple. The man has been looking their way, but his head dips back down towards his food as Jesus looks over. The guy's mouth still working, muttering something, shaking his head as he cuts his steak. A couple of tables away from the couple is a group of four younger guys, one of them whispering something to his buddy, the buddy grinning as he looks their way. Jesus, following the guy's gaze and realizing he's looking at Julia, tenderly wiping something off Amanda's face. The two women in their big boots and work denims and short hair. That look saying all the usual things it said to a bunch of young guys with mullets and metal t-shirts and cap-sleeved denim. Jesus, depressingly understanding what the guy's commentary probably consists of. Jesus, thinking all of this through in a couple of seconds, all of it coming right on the back of to bring hope unto the hopeless, and triggering a second, ancillary thought lower down in his brain. A darker thought, shadowing, stalking the first. This will end. To live in peace, love, and understanding with your friends. To work a little and blow some grass and drink beer and hang out and be happy. Surely this will not be allowed to continue. A squeaky voice next to him and a little fist banging into his thigh brings him back.
Ow! Miles, what's up, buddy?
I said, we know something you don't know.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah,
Danny says, leaning in over his brother.
We do.
It's your birthday soon,
little Miles whispers, grinning to bust the goddamn band.
Miles,
Becky warns from along the table, that mother hearing in full effect. Jesus laughs and looks along at Becky.
No surprises, okay, Bex,
he says. No surprises. He meant it, too. He'd be 33 this December 25th. 33 didn't work out too well for him the last time around. Danny and Miles, both giggling their asses off now.
Oh, you think that's funny, huh? Jesus says, grabbing Miles round the thigh, digging his thumb right into the muscle there.
The kid, laughing hysterically, squeaking with delight, trying to say, no, no! The unforced, genuine laughter of children, spontaneous as sneezing. Truly the music of God. Jesus playing that music for all it's worth, tickling and jabbing at the boy, grabbing him into a headlock and nuzzling his rough stubble into the soft flesh of his neck. Danny punching at Jesus' arm, trying to get in there, wanting his piece of the action. Jesus flicking an arm out at Danny, getting the odd playful tickle in under his guard. The boy's cries competing with the piped Kenny Rogers music, drawing more glances from the other diners.
Excuse me, Jesus?
He looks up, the howling Miles practically stretched across his lap by this time, and sees first the butt of the pistol in the black leather holster, the golden badge on the chest, the silvery beard above it.
Sorry to interrupt your dinner, but could I have a minute of your time?
Sure, Sheriff. They take their drinks to the bar, the glances from the diners emboldening into actual stares as Jesus, in faded jeans, Converse, and tattered Melvin's t-shirt, follows the sheriff across the room.
What fresh hell is this, then? Pete says to Becky as they watch Jesus and the sheriff take up position at the bar.
Both men drinking beers. JC a glass filled from the table pitcher, Ike a long-necked bud, and leaning easily against the mahogany.
Who knows, Becky sighs, patting Bob's forearm reassuringly,
Bob having automatically tensed up some as soon as something unexpected intrudes on the boss.
Yeah, we need nails from time to time, Jesus is saying across the room, raising a palm to Bob to let him know all is well.
But ammonia? What do they think we're up to out there?
I think they think you're making bombs.
The sheriff keeps his voice down and his eyes on Jesus.
Bombs?
Jesus says it like it is the strangest word he's ever heard, just lets it hang there.
I mean, bombs? Hell, why would they even think that?
Well,
Ike takes a long pull on his beer.
You know the FBI, since events up in New York City some years back, the damn Patriot Act and all. I sometimes think, unless you got the Stars and Stripes flying in your front yard and your family reciting the Pledge of Allegiance before dinner every night, they figure you got to be up to something.
Ike shakes his head, traces a bead of beer running down the neck of his bottle with his fingernail.
And don't forget, son, some people probably struggle to get a handle on why you're doing the things you do. See, I'm a Christian myself. The wife and I go to church every Sunday, rain or shine. And just between the two of us,
Ike leans in conspiratorially.
I don't think you're any more the son of God than I'm Columbo. The thing is, most young folks who make a pile of money on a TV show and get their picture in all the papers, they want the easy way. They can't get to Los Angeles fast enough. Buy themselves a mansion and hang out in nightclubs or what have you. From what I can gather, you left Los Angeles, bought a broken-down old ranch way out here in the back of beyond, and declared open house for about any misfit that finds their way to your door. Doesn't seem like the easy way to me. So I figure you must have a good reason for going the hard way.
Well, Sheriff, Jesus smiles, sometimes the hard way is the hard way for a reason.
Ike nods and rests his elbow on the bar, moving closer to Jesus.
But just seeing as we're talking here, tell me, son, have you pissed anyone off lately? I mean, more than usual.
We had a family leave, but that's happened before. I had kind of an, set to with that pastor guy a few weeks back.
Pastor Glass? Charlie Glass?
Yeah, that's him. He a friend of yours, Sheriff?
No. But he's not someone you'd want as an enemy.
Hell, I ain't got no enemies, have I? They both laugh at this. Jesus sighs and looks into his glass.
You say you're a Christian, Sheriff, but you're not like the pastor.
Well, a lot of folks like to overcomplicate things now, don't they? I ain't too bright, so I try and keep it pretty simple myself. Do unto others, that kind of thing.
Man, you get on with my dad, Sheriff.
Ike laughs and looks over at their table, Miles and Danny chasing each other around now.
You folks having a good time?
Always, JC says. Happy Thanksgiving, Sheriff.
And to you, son.
Ike says as they touch beers, the neck of the bud clacking against the frosted glass of Jesus' mug. Exactly as this is happening, as beer touches beer, the word comes down from Washington, from the Attorney General's office, to Tom Hawks, director of the BATF, and then from Tom's office down to Don Gerber's office. And Don finds the word to be good, as does Jerry Caldwell, who places the call to Special Agent Brian Brent at Fort Rigg, who also finds the word good. 2 weeks' time. Saturday, December 8th. Brent walks out onto the porch of the officers' mess into the cold Texas night and looks out over the assault course, listening to the shouts and cries of his men as they go through their paces, practicing forced entry, scaling razor wire fences, finding cover in open fields, the pleasing crunch of heavy combat boots on the canopy of pine needles carries across to him in the gathering dusks.